Imperial Leader, the life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill. It's early 1939, and Winston Churchill is once again in disfavor with the Tories. People are living in the fool's paradise of peace following the Munich Pact. But not Winston Churchill. He knows that war is inevitable, for he understands the psychology of the dictators. But just now, his is a lone voice crying in the wilderness. Then comes March, and Europe is startled to hear that President Haha of the Czech state has been summoned to Berlin. With superb German irony, President Haha is followed by a guard of honor. His room is decorated with flowers. Then he is called to the conference table where Hitler, Goering, and von Ribbentrop are present.
Come, it's getting late. Are you well enough to sign the document, Dr. Haha?
I wish to know, Frank.
Now, Hitler has told you all there is to know. We march into Prague tomorrow.
Oh, please, please, meine Herren, let me appeal to you.
You are wasting our time. There is no need for argument.
Sign.
Gentlemen, Dr. Haha has collapsed again. We must send for a doctor.
Herr Hitler, I shall waste no more time here. There is his signature, so when Haha recovers, he must sign.
My countrymen would repudiate such a document, Herr von Ribbentrop.
They wouldn't dare repudiate it.
I have a duty to Czechoslovakia.
Your duty is to the Führer. Come, sign the document and let us get it over.
I think you had better sign, Dr. Haha. There is nothing else left.
That is correct. Sign, quickly, before you collapse again.
God help me. I suppose I must.
Historic city of Bohemia echoes to the tramp of Nazi jackboots. Another free country succumbs to the German ambition for conquest. In London, the government is shaken into reality of the situation which confronts the world. To a house more crowded than at any time since the abdication crisis, the Prime Minister declares,
"As the House is aware, certain consultations are now proceeding with other governments. In order to make perfectly clear the position of His Majesty's government during that period, in the event of any action which clearly threatened Polish independence, and which the Polish government accordingly considered it vital to resist with their national forces, His Majesty's government would feel themselves bound at once to lend the Polish government all support in their power. They have given the Polish government an assurance to this effect."
The greatest decision for a quarter of a century.
Outside, the ordinary folk of England wait for the members to merge. The ordinary folk who ask,
"This time we got to show Hitler and his gang they can't get away with murder."
"Yes.
Will you try?
Tell him the where he can go."
"What a pity you couldn't be present in the House, Winston. It was a wonderful scene."
"Yes, I heard full reports. Chamberlain has ended appeasement for all time. The people are thunderstruck at the speed with which events have moved, but they're happier. You see that, don't you? They're happier because the suspense has ended to a great extent. It's like 1914. Crowds waiting round, concerned at the crisis, but more in terror of a dishonorable peace."
"Does it mean war, Winston?"
"Yes, we can't get out of it now. Hitler's certain to try his tricks again soon. If he chooses Poland, we're definitely committed to fight. Well, I'm glad that we know where we are at last. We can go ahead now, full speed, and prepare for the struggle. I only hope Hitler gives us time enough to be ready."
"Winston, I see you."
Thatcher, Brendan. Things happen so swiftly these days that there's no such thing. What has happened since the seizure of Albania? Is Germany on the march again?
Oh, this is local news. I've heard on very good authority that the Prime Minister intends to appoint a Minister of Supply.
At last. I started the campaign for a Supply Minister 4 years ago, and I've urged it consistently ever since. But neither Baldwin nor Chamberlain would consider it for one moment. I wrote letters, made innumerable speeches. I pointed out that supply couldn't be achieved without command, that a definite chain of responsible authority must descend through the whole of British industry. But they wouldn't listen. And now, after all these years... Well, it just proves that constant dipping wears away the hardest stone.
You seem very pleased about it.
But pleased? Oh, why shouldn't I be pleased? After all, Brendan, a man isn't asked to join the cabinet every day.
Asked to join the cabinet? Who?
You don't suppose that even Neville Chamberlain would dare appoint any other man but me to be Minister of Supply, do you? Why, it's my baby. The whole country knows that.
But you haven't been approached, have you?
Not yet. But of course I will be.
Winston, I hate to disillusion you, but I... You've
heard something? You know who's to be appointed?
I think my information is reliable, Winston, and you are not mentioned for the job.
Not mentioned?
I'm sorry. I didn't know how you felt about it.
But who? Who's to be appointed? Oh, Eden. Oh, yes, of course. I never thought of him.
It isn't Eden.
But there's no one else. The job's such an important one, they wouldn't dare appoint a nincompoop.
Leslie Burgess.
Good God.
You're surprised?
I'm stupefied. Do you realize what the supply ministry means? Its minister will have control over all defense departments. He can commandeer factories for arms and for the manufacture of tanks. He can command priority for war office supplies whenever the fancy takes him. In short, he's an industrial dictator. And for that post, they pick a man whose only qualification is that he was Minister of Transport for 2 years. I didn't know I was hated so much. Very pleased to see you indeed, Monsieur Brune. Are you staying in England long?
And not very long, Mr. Churchill. I dare say you can guess why I am here.
It was rumored that you were coming to discuss the proposed conscription bill with the British socialist leaders.
Exactly. I am here for that very purpose. And so I say to myself that I must not neglect the call of my good friends, Monsieur and Madame Churchill.
We'd never have forgiven you if you hadn't, Monsieur Brune. Tell me, what do you think of my pet fox cub? Isn't he a beauty?
He is, as you say, a beauty, madame. But beauty is not uncommon in this house.
Oh, how I love the French.
May I inquire if your visit has been fruitful, Monsieur Blim?
I do not know. Perhaps we shall see. But as soon as I heard that the British Socialist Party was opposed to conscription, I had to come. I saw Monsieur Attlee, Monsieur Greenwood, Monsieur Becker. And I told them how shocked we were in France to hear that they intended to vote against the conscription bill. For years, I said, you have consistently urged your prime minister to take a stronger anti-aggression policy in Europe. Yet now, when that policy is on the eve of being realized, you would deny him the means of putting it into effect.
Very true, Monsieur Blin. Such an argument is unanswerable.
What did they say?
Well, they disliked the idea of conscription because in the hands of the present government, it might be used to, as a first step, to regiment the nation.
But don't they realize that when war comes, that's exactly what's got to be done? Not only with labor, but with all the means of production, including capital.
So I explained. When I think my words had a little effect, it may be that the official view of conscription will be modified. I do not know.
But tell us, monsieur, how are things in France?
As well as can be expected. If only we had political stability, like yours. But the Ladier has done well, I think.
And the army?
I do not know, Monsieur Churchill. Gamelin says he is well pleased, But there are those who say we are not sufficiently mechanized. Renault has a young protege, de Gaulle, who is mad about tanks. But the older men loved him. Of what use to build tanks, they say, when the enemy will never get through the Maginot Line? Me? I am no ex-military expert. I do not know.
Yes, I am a great believer in tanks. Always was. They won the last war for us, you know. I believe Germany has them in thousands. But Gamelin should know best, I suppose. And, of course, we can't get away from the Maginot Line.
In 1914, so in 1939, the world drifts to war, and Winston Churchill awaits the call which will enable him to throw into the scale of Britain's defense all his vital energy, ideas, enterprise, and courage as imperial leader.